This is a fluid situation at this time, and I want to emphasize that the risk to the general public remains low.
What can be done to stop the coronavirus? It's Thursday, March 5th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Join us now on Facebook. Keeping nerves calm in the wake of COVID-19, making sense of U.S. politics, and peace with the Taliban, as difficult as you might guess. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Governments around the world are stepping up efforts to combat the coronavirus that so far has infected at least 90,000 people and killed more than 3,100 in Japan. The prime minister has ordered schools to close until spring as South Korea, Italy, Iran, and other nations are mobilizing forces and equipment to begin disinfection operations. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
A new coronavirus infection in the United States appears to have spread to a patient with no link to foreign travel who was not in close contact with another infected person.
This is a fluid situation at this time, and I want to emphasize that the risk to the general public remains low.
That has some people concerned about how the U.S. has handled the disease so far. Jennifer Nuzzo from the Center for Health Security at Johns Hopkins University.
We've tested only a small number of people so far, under 500. Countries like South Korea have tested more than 40,000 people, and health departments have been asking for more resources to be able to do more tests. Right now, it's still a requirement that you've traveled to China in order to be tested, and as we've seen transmission occurring in other countries, I think having that very narrow definition or requirement for testing is probably no longer applicable.
On Capitol Hill on Thursday, U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar faced harsh questioning from lawmakers skeptical about the handling of the new coronavirus outbreak. On the possibility of community spreading, Azar had this to say.
There is context needed. Community spread could be in a town, a locality, or could be nationwide like China.
This week, President Trump downplayed the danger of COVID-19.
We're very, very ready for this, for anything.
Democrats criticized the Trump administration's response earlier this week. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
The United States government must address the spread of this deadly coronavirus as in a smart, strategic, and serious way.
And as new infections reported around the world surpassed those in mainland China, the head of the World Health Organization urged countries to redouble efforts to contain its spread effectively.
The epidemics in the Islamic Republic of Iran, Italy, and the Republic of Korea demonstrate what this virus is capable of. But this virus is not influenza. With the right measures, it can be contained.
But he stopped short of using the word pandemic to describe the outbreak, something Nuzzo disagrees with.
What that tells me as an epidemiologist, when you have this many countries reporting cases and this level of spread and this level of growth of spread, that we're probably seeing ourselves in the midst of a pandemic.
Other countries, including Brazil, Georgia, Greece, North Macedonia, Norway, Pakistan, and Romania, also confirmed their first case of the virus. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
As Korean American churches, worshipers are praying hard as they begin this year's Lenten season for their friends and family in South Korea, which is fighting the world's second worst coronavirus outbreak. Eun Jung Cho visited one church in the Washington, D.C. suburbs and has this report.
Some 200 people gather at the Shining Star Community Church in Fairfax, Virginia for a Wednesday evening service. It is the start of Lent, and for the devout, it is a time of denial and sacrifice. During this Lenten season, worshippers are worried about the spread of the new coronavirus in South Korea, where they've left family and friends behind.
Let us pray for Korea, China, and the world suffering from the coronavirus. Let's open our hearts and eyes towards the Lord in this difficult time.
Among some 1,000 members of this church are those who have family in Daegu, South Korea, the country's coronavirus epicenter. Daily phone conversations keep them connected, as hundreds of new coronavirus cases are confirmed every day in the city.
Restaurants and coffee shops near my sister's house are all confirmed to have been visited by coronavirus patients. They're all closed now. My sister's only eating at home. My father is now confined to his home all the time. That makes my heart ache.
Through prayers, we can encourage those impacted by the coronavirus not to be afraid, but overcome and conquer.
Unlike at Chinese churches across the U.S., which have seen attendance drop as much as 50%, Korean churches saw a minimal impact. Still, Korean churches are implementing safety precautions.
Starting this week, I will not shake hands with the church members. We need to be mindful of hygiene.
And as another precaution, Korean megachurches in Virginia have sent out notices warning anyone who has visited South Korea must not attend services, but watch online instead for the next 2 weeks. Eun Jung Cho, VOA News, Washington.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Japan on Wednesday lifted an evacuation order for parts of Futaba, one of the two towns where the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant is located. Indian authorities on Wednesday temporarily revoked a ban on social media sites and restored full internet access in the disputed Kashmir region. And gloves made in China for the popular French brand Lacoste appear to have been sewn inside a factory where ethnic minorities face forced re-education. You can read much more at VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, as well as our website, voanews.com. Happening now in Asia, a Singaporean candidate is ahead of a Chinese lawyer in a race to head the World Patent Office as Beijing seeks its fifth UN leadership role. This is a move critics say would give it an unprecedented level of influence over new technologies. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
These remote-controlled race cars are not controlled by fingers, but with the mind.
We have our champion, you're the one.
The winner of this race is Jorge Recinos.
Just focus on my car, and it was really amazing.
Good luck, guys. Let's have some fun.
In a separate race, this person won with his eyes closed. The key is this headband by Brainco. It reads the electrical activity of the user's brain through specially developed sensors using hydrogel material. It's measuring the user's ability to focus with the goal of helping a person learn to better focus or relax, says Brainco's Max Newland.
If you're really focused, your brain activity looks a certain way. If you're really calm and relaxed, you can imagine that perhaps your brain activity looks a little different. So we're picking up on these differences and quantifying them on a scale from zero, meaning super relaxed, all the way to 100, which is like the most engaged you've ever been.
Electrical signals can also be sensed and interpreted through the muscles with this prosthetic limb. It includes a processor and sensor that allows Min Cheng Yi to move these fingers with his mind.
I can look at it and every finger starts moving. It's amazing. Hard to imagine.
This type of brain-computer interface technology is how humans will be interacting with machines in the future, says Newland.
Technology, maybe decades ago, we manipulated it with our hands. Think about a light switch. Then we had the iPhone. It's a touch screen. Right? The integration between humans and technology is a bit more smooth. Now we're all using voice.
What's the temperature?
It's 12 degrees Celsius outside.
So what's the next step? The next step is going right from my brain, right from my intentions, into the outside world.
This prosthetic and a race is a glimpse of what is to come.
When you are speeding up this car, you can see your attention level is rising up.
Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Las Vegas.
And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Less than 24 hours after the United States signed a landmark deal with the Taliban to pave the way for peace in Afghanistan, its implementation has already hit the first speed bump. VOA's Aisha Tanzim is in Doha following up on the developments, and here's her report.
The Surpul checkpost on the Kabul-Kandahar highway used to constantly be under attack by the Taliban. Since the start of the partial truce, the soldiers guarding the post are breathing a sigh of relief.
We used to face relentless attacks. Every day, every night, we faced immense difficulties. Now things are much better.
The same is true for shopkeepers in the Durrani Bazaar in Wardak province. They've even increased their business hours.
I used to close my shop at 5 p.m., but now that there is a ceasefire, I close my shop at 6 p.m. We have not heard any gunfire in the last 2 days.
After 19 years of war, the United States and the Taliban agreed to a week-long partial truce. At the end of it, if all goes well, they will sign a deal on the 29th of February in Qatar's capital, Doha. The deal outlines a roadmap for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan, one of President Donald Trump's campaign promises. It also requires the Taliban to negotiate with other Afghans, including the government, on the future direction of their country. In Washington, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Tuesday the goal is to reach an Afghan solution.
Our mission set is very clear. We want to assist and provide structure so that the Afghans can ultimately get an outcome that is led by Afghanis, driven by Afghanis, and is a long-term solution that all of the people of Afghanistan can live with.
But the Afghan government is in turmoil following presidential elections in which two candidates, incumbent Ashraf Ghani and rival Abdullah Abdullah, have declared victory. The bitter standoff comes at a time when Afghan politicians should be building consensus on how to negotiate with the Taliban, says analyst Michael Kugelman.
And yet, at that very moment when you most need that common united front, these long-standing divides within the Afghan political class have been exacerbated because of this political crisis coming out of the election.
Getting various Afghan factions to come together in one representative team to negotiate with the Taliban was already difficult. Observers say this crisis has just added to it. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Taiwan sits near Japan, China, and South Korea, three countries with some of the world's worst outbreaks of the deadly coronavirus. But the island itself has just 42 isolated cases. Chalk it up to early efficacy, preparedness, analysts and policymakers say, so effective that people's approach to the government unexpectedly soared last month. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
VOA Asia continues. In 9 years of war, more than half of Syrian people are displaced. But there has never before been so many fleeing so fast. In a bullet-ridden housing complex once occupied by Islamic State militants, many families say that if the war ends as it appears to be ending, they see no option to ever going home. VOA's Heather Murdoch has this report from Raqqa, Syria.
These buildings once housed foreign Islamic State fighters. Now, families fleeing the battles in Idlib province are quickly filling up the apartments. It is the fastest exodus since Syria's civil war began 9 years ago. Once they arrive, families try to repair the buildings, saying they don't expect to go home anytime soon.
We had to flee. The memories are killing me inside. Imagine someone bleeding to death in front of you, and yet you cannot do anything. You are a human, and they are also a human.
Many people say they traveled for hours, sometimes days, to get here to this relatively safe place. Most of the nearly million displaced from Idlib in the past 3 months have gone north, towards the closed Turkish border, where aid groups have run out of shelters and children have frozen to death. If the war ends as expected, in a victory for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, some families say they cannot go home because Idlib is known as a rebel stronghold, and they fear the government will arrest them, whether they were part of the rebellion or not. Local leaders say the only solution to the displacement crisis in Idlib after the war will be an agreement guaranteeing returnee safety.
The solution is security and stability. People can go home when the bombing stops. But the government has taken our area, so people won't return without a safety agreement. No one dares to go back now.
But families say no agreement will bring back their loved ones, and that all of the current warring parties in Idlib are responsible for the carnage.
I saw my own son die in front of me and another one was injured. How can I possibly forget? What about my husband? I don't know where he is. What if I lose him as well? It's best to stay here.
Aid workers expect the amount of families fleeing to surge when the battle reaches the provincial capital. More than half of the displaced are children. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Raqqa, Syria.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Breakthrough Listen Initiative has been scanning the skies since 2016 to spot communication that might be transmitted by possible intelligent extraterrestrial beings. The Breakthrough Listen Initiative recently released a collection of data that was gathered by the project's most wide-ranging survey of radio emissions. A Pennsylvania State University-led team is working to find out if extraterrestrials could be employing the transiting method, which our scientists have successfully used to spot exoplanets in order to find Earth. The researchers are studying the Breakthrough Listen data to examine radio signals from 20 nearby stars that align with the plane of Earth's orbit, conditions that would allow extraterrestrials from around those stars to detect Earth. So far, the Penn State team and others have found no signs of extraterrestrial civilizations. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Wednesday, the nonprofit group Freedom House released its annual report on freedom and the state of democracy around the world. Continuing a 14-year trend, some of the findings are discouraging. VOA's Arash Arabisadi spoke with Freedom House Vice President of Research and Analysis, Sarah Rapucci, who said that individual freedoms and democratic systems are under attack. Here's Arabisadi's report.
Freedom House's annual report says democracy and freedom are in a state of decline around the world. From crackdowns of demonstrators in Hong Kong protesting Chinese rule to repression of crowds in Iran demanding change in the Islamic Republic. The report shows regimes using brute force to maintain control. It also notes disturbing trends in some advanced democracies.
Democracy is in trouble. This year, we've seen an assault on equal rights and the rights of vulnerable groups in both democracies and under brutal regimes. All of this has added up to this being the 14th consecutive year of decline in global democracy.
Sarah Rapucci is Vice President of Research and Analysis at Freedom House. She says more governments have targeted religious and ethnic minorities.
There is definitely a real trend of countries scapegoating a minority population or testing out techniques on a minority population that then they spread more widely.
Rapucci says repressive societies like China use surveillance first on smaller scales before expanding to monitor and control the country at large. Despite that, she says, people in Hong Kong show a determination to fight for freedom.
It's quite clear from the demonstrations in Hong Kong that those people see freedom and democracy as just as important as people in other parts of the world. The movement in Hong Kong is incredibly important and needs to be supported so that the Chinese government wakes up to the reality of what their people want.
Benin had flawed elections last year. Rapucci says the country's freedom and democracy score dropped to levels typically reserved for countries that have a coup or a war.
To have such an extreme change due to an election in a country that had been one of Africa and especially West Africa's success stories is very troubling for the trajectory of democracy in Africa.
She adds that some countries show progress.
Sudan overall is one of the bright spots of the past year. The fact that a popular movement was able to overthrow a president who had been in power for 30 years and had been convicted of genocide is an enormous story.
Rapucci says hope comes from citizens willing to rise up. Even so, Freedom House's annual report shows that countries suffering setbacks outnumber those making gains by a margin of 2-1. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And we would be remiss if we didn't mention the biggest story, at least in the United States, over the past week. Of course, we are speaking of Super Tuesday. Now, the race for U.S. Democratic presidential nomination has narrowed to two major competitors after Super Tuesday voting, a resurgent former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, a self-declared Democratic socialist, long at odds with the party establishment. Now, the voting across the 14 states on Tuesday also forced former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg out of the contest after he had spent a reported $600 million of his own money on his campaign. But he only won the vote of the tiny American Samoa territory in the Pacific and a handful of delegates to the Democrats' National Presidential Nominating Convention in July. Not a very good return on his investment. In defeat, Mr. Bloomberg quickly endorsed Mr. Biden, calling him my friend and a great American. Now, Mr. Biden was the big winner in the coast-to-coast voting on Super Tuesday, surprising many pundits, capturing 10 states in a show of voter strength that extended from liberal Massachusetts, the northeast home of rival Elizabeth Warren, through conservative states to Texas on the country's southwestern border. Less than a week ago, Mr. Biden's campaign to take on Republican presidential Donald Trump looked like it was on life support with his poor finishes in the first three party nominating contests in February, threatening to end his third run for the presidency that has spanned three decades. But he won last Saturday's South Carolina primary with resounding support from African-American voters. Well, that is VOA Asia for today. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back with you again tomorrow. We hope you will as well. And until then, be well.